Have you ever asked God to give you a sign? I know that I have. And I think that's because we want to make sure that we are listening to God and not listening to some kind of voice in our head. Well, we're talking about that today as it relates to Gideon's story on the Tower Hill Podcast. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the podcast of Tower Hill Church. This is Pastor Jason. However you're listening and wherever you're listening, I pray that you feel blessed by God today. Well, we are in the middle of our sermon series and talking about 12 stones, stories that shape our faith. And this week, we look at the story of Gideon, which is one of my all-time favorites. Well, before we jump into that, just a reminder that our Facebook summer Bible study is coming up. And if you're not familiar with the way that we do this, this is just like we did it in Lent, where there is a daily Facebook video that I'll post that has a devotional thought and maybe even a challenge for the day that's delivered to right to that Facebook group. And then it posts early in the morning. You look at it, kind of get your day going. And we're going through the book of James. So we're calling it Morning Cup with Jason. It goes from July 9th through 31st on Facebook. And so in order to join, you simply go to facebook.com/Tower Hill Church, and you'll find our group, the 20-day Bible study group, and we're going to dive in and do it together. So if you were a fan of the 40-day, I think you're already automatically signed up if you were signed up for that. But just in case, you may want to double-check that. Again, the videos will begin on July 9th. So we love it. We had such a great response the first time we did it, and we're excited to do it again. Well, all right, we are in the middle. If you're listening in real time, July 4th is tomorrow. And it's weird when it's in the middle of the week, right? It's I'm not quite sure what to do. But in any event, I hope that that you are blessed wherever you are, and that you have some good time to celebrate, perhaps to be with family and to relax. So I hope you get that. I hope we all get that. All right. Well, without further ado, here we go into this week's message, 12 Stones, Stories That Shape Our Faith. Have a great one, everyone. And what we're doing is we're looking at these stories of faith that we get from Scripture, mostly in the Old Testament, but also in the New Testament, and to try to figure out what is this, how do these stories shape our story? What do all of these things have to do? These things that happen in different times and different cultures so far removed, is it more than just information we need to know? Is there something about the way that they live that impacts the way that we live now? And as I said as we opened this series, that we are all wired for story. We are neurologically wired for story. Your brain is so wired for story, it will make up stories in the absence of a story. So I'll give you a good example. You go to work in the morning or you go to school and someone gives you the stink eye and you go on the rest of your day, your brain's going to formulate an entire story about why that person looked at you like that. So much so, it's going to have a beginning, a middle, an end, and you're going to have it all figured out about why that person gave you the stink eye. And then later on the day, they just simply come up and tell you that they had bad allergies that morning. In fact, your brain rewards you every time you complete a story. Cortisol is released. Chemicals are released in your brain to say, congratulations, you've solved the story problem. We are so wired for story. It's how we think, it's how we learn, it's how we make meaning. And so what do these ancient stories have to do with our stories here and now? How many of you have ever had the experience of teaching a kid how to ride a bike? Right? Okay. Well, for those who haven't, teaching a kid to ride a bike is fairly rewarding in the end. The process maybe is a little rough at first. So, you know, I don't know. When I was taught how to ride a bike, I feel like my parents didn't care. They're just like, happy birthday, here's your bike, go ride it, figure it out. Like, I don't know, I may have had a helmet, I don't know, maybe. Those were the days where they'd stick you in the way back of the station wagon with no seatbelt, all right, those days. So times were a little different, but when it was time to teach them how to ride their bike, they were sufficiently bubble wrapped. Like,
They had the helmet and they had the pads and they were all set. Like nothing could possibly hurt them. Of course, then they'd find a way to fall on the spot that wasn't padded. But when you're teaching a kid to ride a bike, it's a very slow and highly encouraging environment. So you want to make him feel comfortable with each step of the way. And for a while, you're doing the thing where you're hanging on to him. You're like, I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you. Yep. Yep. Keep going. And they're going, you know, like that. And you're keeping up with them. And then finally, enough time goes by and you're like, okay, buddy. Okay. It's mostly you. It's mostly you. It's all you. It's all you. You let go and they go for a little while, you know, and then they wipe out. And then they get up and they're like crying. There's different degrees of injury. And then you get them up again and encourage them. You're going to do this. Get back on that bike. And as a parent, now listen, you have great patience for your child in this moment because you remember what it's like to ride the bike, learn to ride the bike, and you love them. So you keep picking them up and keep. Now, what would happen if you did that for a week straight? With no improvement, you might get a little less patient, perhaps. You might silently been thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with my kid. They can't figure out how to ride a bike. Is there something I'm missing? I don't know. Now, what if you did it every weekend for a year? And your kid was still not riding the bike. You'd be like, we got a problem. I don't know what's going on. You'd start losing patience with your kid. You'd be like, would you just ride it? Just stay on that thing and ride it. Now imagine if your kid was like 35. And for 35 years, you're trying to get him. Like, you wouldn't be quite as loving and patient at that point. You're just like, oh my gosh, where have I gone wrong in life? What has happened? You're 35. Get on the bike. What's the matter with you? Launch already. Launch. I feel like that's a little bit of a glimpse of what God feels like throughout the entire Old Testament. Because he was teaching them how to ride the bike for 1,300 years and they kept getting it wrong. If you are not convinced that God was a God of grace and mercy in the Old Testament. Just think about that fact. He never stopped picking up his children, even though he should have long ago. He never stopped. Millennia, he was picking his kids up. They still didn't figure out how to ride the bike. He's teaching them how to live life. He's teaching them how to do it. He's with them every step of the way. And then they do the, we got it from here. Thank you. And they wipe out. I've once heard it put this way, and I think it's helpful, calling it the sin cycle. This really sums the whole time in the Old Testament, but I think it sums up our life experience now. The people sin. They fall off the bike, and as a result, they suffer. Why? Because they didn't listen to God. They didn't listen to how they were supposed to ride. They kind of didn't pay attention. And then things get so bad, they cry out to God again. God, help us, rescue us. And so God would rescue them. And for a while, they'd be super thankful. Thank you so much for putting us back on the bike. We love this. This is awesome. We got it from here. Same thing over and over again. God's children fall, they suffer, they cry out, he picks them up, they make all sorts of promises, then they fall, then they suffer, and he rescues. This was the whole book of Judges, where God would send a rescuer. That's what judge really meant, not a judge with a gavel, but judge as a rescuer, as a lifeline. God kept doing it over and over and over again. And this is where we get into our scripture today, our story about Gideon. Gideon was one of these judges that God called out to save his people. So let's get into our scripture today, starting with verse 11 of Judges chapter 6. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abizrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. Now, if we were to stop right here and read that about 15 times, we still might not know what the heck they're talking about, because there's some cultural stuff in there that isn't intuitive because it's such a far removed culture. So I want to unpack a little bit to explain how did we get here and what does this mean. So Gideon is threshing wheat, and that process is simply removing the outer husk of the wheat so that you can get to the grain, the good stuff. And it was a process that was very labor intensive. And the way they used to do it back in Jesus' days, they'd find a large stone slab and they would put oxen on it, and they'd put all the wheat that they harvested on the circle, and the oxen would just simply trample it. And it would break open the little husk and the grain would come out. It was a long process. But it says that Gideon wasn't threshing the wheat on what's known as the threshing floor. Instead, it said he was threshing it in a wine press. Now, a wine press was also made out of stone. But as you could see, it was something that was much, much smaller. You cannot fit oxen on there, which meant Gideon was threshing the wheat in a small space by hand. So the next question is, well, why in the world was he doing that? And it answers it, because of the Midianites. Now, who are the Midianites? They were oppressors. They were a strong and numerous people, and they would just ravage the Israelites. So the Israelites are like hiding up in the hills. They're not threshing the wheat on the threshing floor, because what they would do is they'd grow the crop, they'd go through all the work to thresh it out. The Midianites would come and just raid their crop, raid all their grain, and they'd be left with nothing. So Gideon's doing it in secret, in a wine press instead, so that the Midianites don't find out where their grain is. Verse 12. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Let's think about this for a second. Gideon is hiding because he doesn't want to fight. And the angel calls him mighty warrior. So Gideon's reaction, naturally, verse 15, "Pardon me, my Lord," Gideon replied, "but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." I love how this always happens in Scripture, because I feel like this mirrors our everyday life. God asks someone to do something, and their immediate reaction is, "It can't be me. Nope, I'm just not the one that you should be choosing." Like, Gideon's like, "Look, I know we need a hero here. I'm not one of those. I'm one of the weak ones. We're the nerds. We hang out often. We hide. We run away. We are not the fighters. Not so much. That's why I'm here doing this job nobody wants to do by hand, because I don't want to go out there and fight. The pain of doing the job this way is less than the pain of actually fighting the Midianites. I am not that person." Does that feel familiar to you? Maybe you've had that experience before where you felt like God was calling you to do something and you're like, "Yeah, I don't think that's me." Like Moses, "I don't speak too good." I don't know why he sounded kind of like Sylvester Stallone there. I don't know, Adrian. I don't speak too good. But everyone's got like this fear. God calls them to do something, like, "It can't be me. I am not adequate enough." And I think that's exactly why God consistently calls inadequate people. If you're feeling inadequate with the calling God's placed on your heart, you are probably right where you're supposed to be. Why? Because then when it comes true, when it happens, you know that it was God who did it. It wasn't you. He works through your weakness with his strength. Now, have you ever had the experience where God asks you to do something, and then, you know, you feel it, you're feeling like, "Okay, I think I'm getting it. Just show me a sign that it's really you. That's usually the next step. Show me a sign, because I don't want to misinterpret this. I'm worried it might just be like some random voice in my head. To make sure it's not, if this car in front of me turns left, I'll know that this thought is from you. Like, we start getting really weird with the signs. We're like, okay, now if the green truck drives by my block four times and a white horse follows it, I'll go to church this morning, you know. We're real big on the signs. Well, Gideon was no different. He got this. He's like, listen, I'm about to go to battle. Let's make sure this is you, God. So he asked God for a sign. And some of you are familiar with this story. Verse 36, Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you have promised, look, I will place a wool fleece on the threshing floor. If there is dew only on the fleece and all the ground is dry, then I will know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you said. Like, all right, reasonable enough. The dew, right? The dew makes the fleece wet and the ground's dry. Okay, there's a sign. Verse 38, and that is what happened. Gideon rose early the next day. He squeezed the fleece and wrung out the dew, a bowl full of water. Now, we read this and we're like, okay, all right, Gideon, there's your sign. Suit up. Time to battle. But Gideon, he's not satisfied with that sign. I wonder what happened. I wonder if in his head he's thinking, well, you know what? Actually, that may have just happened naturally. Like, the wool is probably going to gather the dew more than the ground. So maybe that just happened and it wasn't God at all. For whatever reason, it seems he's talked himself out of whatever this sign was, that it wasn't good enough, wasn't adequate. I'm sure you've never done that. But here's my favorite part. If anybody tells you they don't see grace and mercy in the Old Testament, point them to this, please. Verse 39, then Gideon said to God, do not be angry with me. Let me make just one more request. Allow me one more test with the fleece. I've got to think, is God up there just like, oh, enough with the fleece, dude? Like, really, more with the fleece? He didn't say that. That's Second Opinions chapter 3. But this time, make the fleece dry and let the ground be covered with dew. Oh, that's a good one. The fleece be dry, but the ground's covered. And God doesn't just like go, poof, right? It's like, you're annoying, poof, let me get somebody else. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do that at all. In fact, verse 40, that night God did so. Only the fleece was dry. All the ground was covered with dew. And I have to imagine at this point, Gideon's like, uh-oh. I have to actually do this thing. I find in Gideon's story so many parallels to everyday life that, you know, he was so afraid because he thought he was weak. Gideon thought he was weak. And he had a really hard time trusting in God. Where do you have a hard time trusting in God? When do you find it hard to do that? I want to make this a little interactive this morning, and I want to invite you to share with somebody that you came here with. If you're here by yourself, you can partner up with someone else. If you're here by yourself and you're an extreme introvert, just do it in your head. We're not going to make you do anything. But just for a minute, just turn to the person next to you. Answer this question. When do you find it hard to trust in God? Go. If you're a guest with us for the first time, don't worry. We don't do that every week. I would love to hear a couple. When do you have a hard time trusting in God? Just raise your hand and we'll kind of call out. I see way in the back. Nice and loud. I'm sorry, I missed it. When someone's being mean. Good one. Yeah. Things start to go wrong. Letting go of betrayal. Yeah, looking in the face of suffering. Or maybe it's taking a long time for God to deliver on whatever you're hoping for. And, you know, and that's how it works with us, right? We're like, God, I would love an answer sometime this afternoon, like if you don't mind. Or at least by the end of the week. When things are rough. How about when things are going good? I feel like sometimes I have a hard time trusting in God because I'm just not thinking about them. Because things are going good. Or maybe when you feel like there is just no possible way forward, you have a hard time trusting in God. If you've ever had a hard time trusting in God, you're in good company. Trust is difficult. But the thing that's amazing to me is that when we do trust, we discover that God shows up. Just like he did for his children with Gideon on the threshing floor. I started thinking, what's the deal with the threshing floor? God seems to keep showing up there in the Old Testament. He shows up there for Ruth, for David, for some of the prophets, for Gideon. What is the deal with the threshing floor? And I think it's this. When you're on the threshing floor, that's where you see how God has provided for you to survive. Right? That's where you see how much grain you have to make bread for you to live. And I feel like that's exactly it. It's the place where God's provision meets our deepest need. That's why he shows up on the threshing floor. And he shows up on the threshing floor of our souls. It's that place where we have our deepest need. That's where he wants to show up. And that's the place where we're going to be required to trust him the most. And so Gideon's story. Gideon trusts in God and they defeat the Midianites. Despite the fact that they were severely outnumbered, they won because of God's strength. Not Gideon's strength. So what does this story have to say about our story? How does Gideon's story shape my story? I think this is an important thing. Whenever you're reading scripture, I think it should always end with this kind of question. Okay, so what? So what does this have to do with my life? And I think we find that there are many, many parallels. And the first thing that I would say is, when you find yourself threshing in a wine press, something is wrong. What do I mean by that? There are certain indicators in your life that things aren't going the way that they're supposed to. And you're usually avoiding the real issue by just getting yourself out of alignment. Just like Gideon went, his real issue was actually spiritual in nature, but his real issue wasn't the fact, he was hiding from the Midianites. And threshing the grain in the wrong place. So what do I mean by indicators? I think there are indicators when things are off. For example, if you struggle with anger, and you know the difference of somebody who struggles with anger and someone who doesn't, it's that it takes just snap of the fingers and it sets you off. And you find that your default position in life is anger. That's an indicator. That something is wrong. Or perhaps it's loneliness. I know there are times where I've felt desperately lonely in a room full of people. If you're feeling detached, lonely, that's an indicator that something isn't right. Or maybe if you're self-medicating. I think we all have to be honest about that. How much are we eating, drinking, or even exercising, watching TV? We're turning to these things to self-medicate instead of dealing with the real issue. That's an indicator that something is wrong. And why is that important? Because God doesn't want us living that way. He wants us on the threshing floor. He wants us doing what we were made to do in the way that he designed us to do it. Maybe it's the sin cycle all over again that we're dealing with that's causing things to just be off. All right, the next thing. Number two, maybe you're pushing natural solutions to supernatural problems. What do I mean? Maybe you're in a place in your life when you are just like beating your head against the wall trying to go in a certain direction. And everybody around you is probably saying, keep going, you're going to break through. Or you're going to knock yourself out. Sometimes that's true. You just got to be persistent and get through. But other times it's because you're at the wrong wall. You're at the wrong wall. God doesn't want that for you. And you're trying all these natural solutions, but the issue is spiritual or supernatural in nature. So Gideon's example is a great one. The problem wasn't the Midianites. The problem was Israel stopped listening to God. The problem was spiritual first before it was natural. And so he's trying to solve the problem by doing this threshing in private. That was his solution. That was no solution at all. The real problem had to do with listening to God. And sometimes that's true with us. We get stuck and we don't know why. We get stuck in a relationship. We get stuck in a job. We get stuck in a situation. And usually it's because we're banging our heads against the wrong door or the wrong wall. And maybe the problem is spiritual in nature, that we have to turn our hearts back to God first and see where he leads us. I was thinking about our mission trip this last week, and I got to tell you how many times this happened. So our poor adult leaders, again, my heart goes out to our adult leaders because they do so much. But the hardest thing for them, I think, is the fact that they get sent to these sites where they're doing their work with kids. Usually it's just they're the only adult, and then there's four kids with them, and they have a job to do. And listen, some of the kids have never picked up a hammer, neither have some of the adults. I'm just saying, they aren't experts in construction. They really don't know what to do. And it freaks them out. They have so much anxiety. Like, I don't know how to do this. Or they're in the middle of a project, and then we had to stop because we didn't have the right tool. And then we did this, and we found out we had the wrong paint. And then we did this, and there's all this anxiety. And what happens is they try all these natural solutions, and they don't work. And so then they end up praying. We heard so many stories of this week. They end up praying, God, somehow, some way, you got to solve this problem because we don't know what we're doing. And then a guy shows up with the right tool. Someone shows up with the right paint that they need. A neighbor has the right size extension ladder for them to finish the job. Because sometimes the problems need supernatural solutions, not natural solutions. And then the third is to trust that God will meet you on the threshing floor of your life. If you're open to it, he will meet you in your place of deepest need. In fact, I'd be willing to bet he's already there, waiting to pick you back up and put you on the bike. That you've fallen, and he, like a loving parent, continues to scoop you back up in his arms. All you have to do is ask. God's provision is the theme of Gideon's story, and it's the theme of our story. And here's the thing that's amazing as we get ready to celebrate communion. I think there's so much foreshadowing, right? The whole idea that God, that the provision of God is going to meet our deepest need. And who is Jesus? But the ultimate sign of that from God. Our deepest need as humanity is we need a restored relationship with God. And we get that through what Jesus did on the cross for us, forgiving our sin forever. God's provision met our deepest spiritual need already. And what communion is a celebration that we have that communion with him. And I think the whole Old Testament is a foreshadowing, including this story of Gideon. I think it's no accident that he was threshing the grain in a wine press, the bread and the body, God's provision, the bread and the wine. It's a foreshadowing of how he was all in on making sure that he meets us in our place of deepest need.